I'm just saying it's no more silly than the story plot line to Doom.
No, Doom, that's proven fact. Scientists have actually run tests on how the Doom God comes to be, and I'm pretty sure it works out well. Yeah.
Isn't the, and forgive me for my ignorance, but isn't the plot of original Doom that the Doom guy had a pet rabbit?
Daisy? Absolutely had a pet rabbit named Daisy, and the demons killed her. Now he's out for revenge.
Yeah, so now he wants to go kill the demons, not to save all of humanity or to stop hell from overtaking the Earth or Mars or wherever. It is exclusively to get revenge for his pet rabbit.
But it was really just, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back there. You know, like the hell thing was already kind of going on. The rabbit thing was just the tipping point, you know, like, oh man, all these demons, my family's dead. That's really sad. My rabbit died. Oh, shit. And then he goes ham.
You see, that really seems like a fantastic backstory for like a D&D barbarian.
Oh, like his pet died.
Like his character's entire family died. They were fine. They lost everything. The whole world went to shit. But then their rabbit died.
I could be a Doom guy. That's it. Now, I'm going to play a barbarian at some point. I've said I want to do it in a campaign. It'd be fun. I want to hit things, right? I might just have to play a Doom-inspired barbarian. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with everybody at the table knowing it's Doom-inspired.
I think that would be awesome.
I think it'd be super fun.
Be cool.
Get the artificer to make you a chainsaw weapon. And you can get a meat hook. Barbarians don't like use ranged weapons, but we could find some way to get you like a cool melee firearm situation.
Maybe it's like a dual wield thing. Like maybe in one hand I have like an axe of some sort. In my right hand I have this, like, it's almost like a whip, like a modified whip that I can whip people with and pull myself in.
Oh,
that would be kind of cool.
That would be sick. And, you know, honestly, I can't imagine a better character for the race to be GIF in this case.
Yes.
I really want Hippo Doom Guy.
Oh, my God.
This is a
GIF
great
Doom
idea.
Doom Guy? That's actually a great character.
I could modify Gordo to be some sort of bloodlusty ooze. I'm okay with that. I could figure it out. I'll have to think about the backstory a little bit.
The ooze guy.
The ooze guy. I'll have him make all of his own stuff. So he'll make it and he'll just call it the Praetor armor, but like it's just off the top of his head, you know. It wasn't stolen from anything. He just happened to call it that.
Yeah, you know, Armorer Artificer would honestly work pretty well for the Doom Guy. I mean, I know like Doom Guy is all jacked and roided up, but just give him some powerful armor and now he's punching people.
Oh, but then I can't be a barbarian because then I don't get that the unarmored movement and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. But then you also have your ranged weapon built in, which, you know, it's like the little lightning launcher, and you could flavor that as like, you know, a plasma rifle or anything.
Ooze rifle. Yeah. Everything I have is gonna be ooze. Ooze rifle, ooze armor, ooze everything. Ooze companions, all of this stuff. Everything I have to have is ooze.
Okay. We can make that a reality, I'm sure.
I don't know, but you keep saying ooze so much that all I think about is the Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah. I was watching one of those Ninja Turtle shows the other day. There was this kid over my house, and so, you know, he was harassing us. They're like, here, watch TMNT.
There was this kid over at my house. Just this random kid.
Well, no, he was in the street touching some old guy, and he said, give me your arm. I said, well, just come inside instead. This is way safer. And so he sat on my couch just watching TMNT. And yeah, he was just chilling. And I walk over to him, and I'm like, you know, how is the, you know, what's your favorite turtle, right? Because I have to know what his favorite turtle is. And if he says, you know, Raphael or Mikey, he's wrong. Because those are the least cool ones, right? And then I got into it, and I sat down on the couch with him, and I started watching it.
This is the first time, I think, that I fully agreed with you on something, Drew, because Raphael and Mikey are the two worst ones. Donatello and Leonardo are absolutely where it's at. And if you're a Raphael or Mikey fan, you're just you're a sheep.
You know, it's weird, because Leonardo's definitely the paladin of the group, and Donatello's the artificer, and I love both of those classes. But you both are wrong. Mikey's the best. And,
oh, my
and
God.
As a child, of course, I always gravitated towards Raphael because he was the edgy one.
No, see, because Raphael is like the fake Shadow the Hedgehog. But, like, then you get Donatello. Donatello is definitely the best. Like, no one can fight with me on that. He's the best one. He's the smartest. He probably fights and hits the hardest. Like, I don't know. He only needs a stick. The other guys have blades. Oh, okay. I can't. Michelangelo
You're
has.
Right.
Michelangelo
oh,
has Mike,
but he's got pizza. He's just.
Yeah. He's just wild, you know? He's just a little crazy. He's a loose cannon. I'm not really into that loose cannon stuff. Donatello, he's tactful. And also, in the most recent Ninja Turtles comic series that got released, The Last Ronin, which I don't know if you guys know this, but Ninja Turtles, they're really edgy in their comic series. like super edgy, as in like this is a series where Donatello is the only living Ninja Turtle.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard of that. And doesn't he take like the weapons from the others too? And so now he's using like all of them.
Yeah, he switches between the weapons based on what he needs, and he's the only living Ninja Turtle, and he just travels around and kills things.
They all died?
Yeah, they all died. They all got killed.
In this Ninja Turtles timeline, please, but yes, I'll grant you that. Last Ronin Donatello, I'm sure, is the best Ninja Turtle.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, it's Michelangelo.
No.
He's just a fun guy. He likes eating pizza, hitting people with nunchucks.
Mm-mm. He's definitely the least cool one. He's too mainstream. Zach, you are just putting yourself into the mainstream system right now.
Dude, you're uploading to the mainframe right now. Are you a Neuralink?
Oh, he's Neuralinked. Def, I can see it in his face right now. He's Neuralinked.
Nah, does not compute. cannot fabricate. Lie.
Oh. You guys can't see it right now, but Zach's actually attacking me relentlessly.
Yep, and now Drew's uploaded too. So I think that's probably how we'll do the rest of this episode, and then we'll work out how we take over the planet from there.
Well, with that, welcome to this episode of Table Talk Friday. My name is Seth Pittman. I'm joined by my two best friends, Zachary Carvon and Andrew Mana. How are you boys doing today?
You know, Seth, I'm living my life to the fullest. It's a little rainy, so I got a little moist coming in, kind of like Ganondorf after he died in the last game. But you know, I'm feeling good. I'm living my life to the fullest, and I'm ready to talk about some cool stuff in our next upcoming topic.
Yeah, I'm doing great as well. It is a cold and rainy day, so I'm happy to be inside, and that Drew has come to my apartment for us to record. I think that's the ideal situation for me here. But it's just we got some nice vibes going on. You know, it's all cozy indoors. So happy to be recording this episode to talk about 8th level spells.
Are we just doing 8th or are we doing 8th and 9th? I didn't catch that drift.
You know, that's a good question, Seth. So I think in the past, welcome back to Frequently Cast Spells, my favorite segment on the show. In the past, doing Frequently Cast Spells, we always say we're going to do 5th and 6th. We're going to get through 6th and 7th today. And it always ends up being two separate episodes. So we're going to say we're going to do 8th and 9th level spells today, and we'll see how far we get. But 8th level spells are probably the most underwhelming in terms of usability for high level casters. So maybe we'll run out of steam early, but I do have a couple spells that I've found fairly interesting that I do want to delve into here, so we'll see how long we go.
There is a couple. I just don't know what happened when they started making these 8th level spells, and we're like, yeah, we're just gonna make them, you know, less interesting than 7th level spells, but like some of them are kind of strong, but not really, and they have all this extra text that makes them weird. I'm not sure what happened or who dropped the ball doing this, but 8th level spells are definitely my least favorite spells in the entirety of D&D.
I'm looking right now, and they're not good. I'm reading through, like, especially the ones that the wizard gets, and it's like most of them could be used by like an NPC to cast something really cool, right? But like for a player, there's nothing other than dominate monster that's really going to change the tides of a battle.
You know, I'll agree to disagree. So let's go ahead and get right into it. I think there's one 8th level spell that no one will disagree is a fantastic spell, and is definitely deserving of its 8th level bar to entry, and that is Glibness. Oh. You boys, I'm sure you know what Glibness does. I've talked about it in the past. We've never seen it in play at our table, but that's just because we never have a high level bard or warlock able to cast it. But what Glibness does is it's a 8th level transmutation spell. You can only cast it on yourself. It lasts for 1 hour, no concentration required. Until the spell ends, when you make a charisma check, you can replace the number you roll with a 15. Additionally, no matter what you say, magic that would determine if you're telling the truth indicates that you are being truthful. So essentially, this is the spell that you cast, and you can just take over the kingdom. There is no possible way you can fail a charisma check. Now, of course, you are still bound to, like, the laws of reality. So things that you can't possibly get away with on a charisma check, you won't be able to do. But you are the most convincing person, and even a zone of truth that would determine you're lying are unable to see through the power of Glibness. I think this is an awesome roleplay spell, and it's definitely it's great on players, of course, if you can snag it, but I'm imagining this is also fantastic just from like a flavor perspective to see how the bard, the evil bard, has taken over the kingdom. Like, okay, he's just some guy. It makes me think of Hugh Grant's character from the D&D movie. I know he was supposed to be a rogue, but like, this is just some sly motherfucker who talked his way up to the top. And with glibness, you could easily see how that could come to pass and why everyone seems so stupid because he's so blatantly lying. But there's just something about that charm that got through.
I like the charm that it brings. My issue is that all of these spells, including glibness, all these 8th level spells, they come across as like interesting, but I would rather have them as a magic item or some sort of curse or something that happened, right? So I love the idea of this evil bard taking over the kingdom because he's so charismatic, but I think it's so much more fun that he's just charismatic, making it like he did this on his own without spending an 8th level spell slot to do this for an hour, by the way, you know?
Or think about this in context as far as like magic items go. He doesn't have to be an incredibly like powerful guy. He could be like slowly weaning down like a potion of glibness, right? Like, so where he's been using this over time to get all the way to the top. Now he's running out of his resources. He's panicking. Oh my God, how am I going to stay on top of the world when I can't blatantly lie anymore? Like, he's running out of his magic. I like that kind of plot line even more.
That is pretty cool. But again, it's the item. It's when you take an 8th level spell and you create some sort of magic item, artifact, or situation with it, right? That would be so much more fun than the spell glibness.
I suppose that's fair, but I just can't think of a more fitting high-level spell for a bard to have, you know? Like, this is the quintessential bard spell, in my opinion.
That's true, but what is a bard rolling at that level? When you could take this, you have to be, what, 15th, 16th level? Maybe,
I believe it's 15th. 16th.
We'll go with 15th. So at 15th, as a bard, you have +5 to your proficiency at that point, right? So then you have expertise on it because you're a bard, right? So you're getting a +10 before your charisma bonus. So
yes, you get a 30 every time you make a charisma check. That's correct.
Do you need a 30 every time you make a charisma check?
No, and but I want
on,
it.
Depending on who you're talking to, you might need that 30.
Right. I mean, this is the spell that, you know, that we've got some world ending situation going on and we need to garner the aid of some celestial or some powerful fiend. And like, normally we wouldn't be joining forces with this cosmic entity, but you know, the world's on the line. So when we're making our argument to this very powerful character that if things go south, you know, it might mean the end of all of us, you want that bard out in front with glibness and, you know, that ability to make that check. I mean, this is the, you go into the Red Dragon's lair and say, hey, I know that, you know, this is a weird ask, but don't you hate giants? We've got the Storm Giant King who's destroying the entire world. Why don't you just go go take care of him and we'll come along with you. And, you know, that doesn't sound like a great idea to the Red Dragon, but with glibness, it might.
That is pretty cool. But I do like the roll. I feel like it would be more fun to roll for it, you know. But also, on top of that, the idea that you're just always telling the truth. I want to tell somebody, like that dragon you were talking about, the hates giants, right? I want to tell that dragon, the red, we'll say it's a red dragon for sake of continuity here. I want to go to that red dragon and say, with glibness activated, you're blue. And have him just take a million psychic damage all at once. Like, he couldn't comprehend what is happening.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's how glibness works, but It might work depending on the dragon.
Yeah, that seems more like what is it? The modified memory. Just a greater modified memory.
What happens if you do that to like a solar or a planetar? Because I believe in their stat blocks, it specifically says that they always know when they hear a lie. But is that not a magical feature? So would glibness allow you to lie to a solar? That would be really cool.
I don't know. It says, just no matter what you say, magic that would determine if you are telling the truth indicates that you are being truthful. They're magical beings, right? So I guess the question is, by default, I would say yes, they would know because it's technically not magical. It's their ability. But we would have to go into like the ancestry of angels. Like, are they like sorceress? You know, do they have magic inside of them? Is that how their abilities come about? I don't know.
I think it's up to debate. But for an 8th level slot, if I were the DM, I'd probably say, yeah, it works.
I think I would say, let's play rollies, and we're going to roll and see who rolls higher.
No, no.
That's fair. I mean, depending on the circumstances, if it's going to derail the campaign for the solar to be lied to in that way, then I might say, all right, let's roll for it and make it like a thing. But I like that the options
are
at least.
Or I think of it. So I think of a solar kind of like the Vision from Marvel. Right. So the way I'm kind of thinking of it, maybe for the first time, the solar questions if it actually knows or not, you know, the solar's like, huh,
maybe it does.
Maybe like, am I being lied to right now? It's not sure.
That would be awesome. I think just like removing the certainty is even like that's a cool concept. Yeah. I like that.
I like the idea of just corrupting something that basically can't be corrupted with this spell. That's actually a very cool idea. Like if there were a particular angel in a particular book or a particular game that could be corrupted like that, that would be a cool way, you know, wink wink, that it could happen.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's a good backstory for like a fallen angel villain. Is they're following this powerful warlock or bard or whomever who cast Glibness because they're just so convincing.
I feel like it's a solid pick, to be honest. Now, I think you have kind of persuaded me. This could
be. Yeah, you've convinced
fun to
me
use
that this
game
is the quintessential spell, and I would like to use it on my next bard.
I won't. I can't say this for certain because I don't have it in front of me. But I'm wondering if this is on the arcane spell list for 1D&D, and will wizards and sorcerers also be able to cast this in the new player's handbook? Because honestly, I think my biggest issue with Glibness is it's not going to be used by all spellcasters. It's just bards and warlocks currently.
So now let's go ahead and talk about the most powerful, coolest 8th level spell that I've used, only because it was in the book for a campaign I was running. Let's talk about Feeble Mind a little bit, because
I love Feeble Mind.
Feeble Mind is a very, very fun spell, especially to use on your players. As I'm not going to spoil anything about Descent into Avernus, but Feeble Mind is used pretty. It's used frequently in the campaign, and
it's certainly featured.
It's certainly featured in the campaign, and we've seen it more than once. Now, Feeble Mind by itself is not a damaging spell. The target takes 46 psychic damage and must make an intelligent saving throw. But on a failed save, if they fail that intelligent saving throw, their intelligence and charisma scores become 1. The creature can't cast spells, activate magic items, understand language, or communicate in any intelligible way. The creature can, however, identify its friends, follow them, and even protect them. At the end of every 30 days, the creature can repeat its saving throw. 30 days. If it succeeds on the saving throw, the spell ends. The spell can also be ended by greater restoration, heal, or wish. So, Feeble Mind's a very fun spell, especially for RP sake, where your character gets feeble-minded by whether it's a great wizard, by touching a substance they maybe shouldn't have touched, by and any means that they get feeble-minded. It could absolutely, 1, derail their character because they're not able to speak or talk or anything like that, and 2, makes it so they have to play the game in a completely different way until greater restoration, heal, or wish is found. So just, if you're at that point where you can have greater restoration, Feeble Mind is one of those spells you need to watch out for.
Again, I love this spell now, just like Libidus. I love this spell, right? I think it's very cool. It is on par with the rest of the 8th level spells. I still feel like it's cooler as a magic item. I like the idea that there's some murky water you touch that makes you feeble-minded, or there's a cursed statue that lets a god take over your body and you're feeble-minded while he possesses you, or something along those lines. Maybe there's some sort of magical hide on an ancient beast that could feeble-mind you with like melee attacks and stuff. I love that. I still think it's a very cool spell. I think it's great for wizards to have, sorcerers to have, that kind of thing. Great big villains and mages. But I still like it more as an item. I know that sounds odd, but a lot of these 8th spells, I just think they're cooler as items.
I think a character getting like captured and feeble-minded, though, is a really cool idea. Like, say the great wizard captures your friend, feeble-minds them, and then the next time you see them, they're just acting as this kind servant to this guy because they got feeble-minded.
Right. I see where you're coming from, Drew, because you don't want to see these kinds of things thrown around at lower levels against your players. But I'll say, you know, this is high-level play, and so there are... I mean, ultimately, this spell does just come down to an intelligence saving throw, which can be foiled fairly easily.
That's true.
So I think it makes sense for, you know, a high-level wizard to be able to cast this. And, you know, reasonably, you only get 1/8 level slot, so it's a one-shot try to make this happen. And if it fails, all right, well, we got to use our 9th level slot just to try again with no added effect. I feel like Feeble Mind is appropriately powerful for 8th level. I mean, honestly, reducing all of your intelligence and charisma to 1 takes a character out of commission in a lot of ways. So I see no reason that this wouldn't honestly even be 9th level. So I think that this is appropriately powered for 8th level, absolutely.
Do you think it's because you said it could be a 9th level spell, and with the last little bit of subtext on the spell is it lasts for like 30 days before you get to make your next save. Do we feel like it's definitely supposed to be a 9th level spell? I mean, that's
no, because it can get cured like by greater restoration.
But how many people have greater restoration? How many people have the resources to do that?
Any cleric, paladin, anyone who has greater restoration or has the ability to have greater restoration should be able to cast.
You're right, but that's a, 5th level spell? So what level do you have to be, like 10, 12?
Sure, and to cast Feeble Mind, you have to be 15th. So, I mean, to your point, we may have run into a scenario where we were much lower level and we ran into this and were unable to disperse it in, you know, a quick enough fashion. But for the levels that this is really intended for, it's a great way to take a creature like the enemy sorcerer, take them out of commission instantly. Now they can't do anything. But if you give them enough time, a greater restoration or wish or whatever, heal is the other one that it states. It can deal with it because obviously this is a debilitating spell, and 30 days is ridiculous to just ask to wait that out.
It is, yeah. It is juicy. It absolutely is juicy. I will say, do you guys think it's much greater effect against melee fighters?
I mean, it's less effect against melee fighters. It knocks out like a wizard. It knocks the sorcerer out. It knocks anybody out who needs charisma or intelligence. So it knocks them out completely. It's way less effect against a melee fighter because they can still identify friends and foes.
Right. I'll say it's easier to get this to take effect on a melee fighter, of course, because they're the ones who are going to be failing intelligence saves. The only reason why I would say, you know, you have to exercise caution when casting this against a wizard is obviously they have the best intelligence saving throws. And also there are, it's not listed in the spell, but I believe Mind Blank, which is a spell that wizards get access to, would also negate the effects of a Feeble Mind because it shields your mind from any spells that would affect it. So,
I think it actually would. I still have that spell scroll. I got to get working on that sometime soon. That would be great for the party to have.
Which, speaking of, I don't know how frequently this is cast
Never.
In play, but it definitely seems like Mind Blank is intended for high levels, especially if you're going into, say, the Mind Flayer Fortress or, you know, any powerful creature where psychic damage is actually being thrown around. Mind Blank is awesome. Essentially, it lasts for 24 hours, no concentration required. It's a touch spell, so the wizard can give it out to whomever they'd like. And until the spell ends, one willing creature you touch is immune to psychic damage and any effect that would sense its emotions or read its thoughts. Divination spells and the charm condition are affected as well. The spell even foils wish spells, and spells or effects of similar power used to affect the target's mind or gain information about the target.
You know, I kind of like that because it's sort of on the same par as Glibness. When you cast Glibness, you are the top of the food chain on charisma. You have maxed out your charisma. You are set to go. There's nothing anyone could do against your charismatic powers, right? With Mind Blank, I feel like it completely protects your mind from like all sorts. It like destroys divination and even high level spells like Wish. So I think it's sort of on par with just reaching the top of the top of something. And I kind of like that for 8th level spells. If at 8th level, you should be doing something strong enough to where you dominate everything of like a certain group. Right, like you should be able to be immune to a certain type of damage or something with 8th level spell. You should be able to block out that divination magic. You should be able to, I don't know, just be able to defeat like a single enemy, like just no hands needed, right? Like to one, let's just say like dragons. Maybe like you're super effective against dragons now because you've cast this 8th level spell, Dragon Slayer or something. Like that's kind of where I see 8th level spells should be. So I do kind of like it. I agree. Mind Blank is pretty solid along the lines with Glibness.
Now, you mentioned a word there in your entire description. You said the word dominate. And dominate monster happens to be one of my favorite 8th level spells, only because it lets you just completely, you know, we're talking a lot about like minds taking over right now, like losing that charisma, losing that intelligence. But how about just being completely taken over by a creature of some sort? Now we ran into a lich at one point in our campaign who dominated one of our players and forced them to come, you know, speak to them. And this is just one of many, many, many different ways that I would love to see the tides of a battle turning. Say, like, you're fighting against a dragon and a giant who have teamed up for some purpose, and you dominate Monster the Dragon to now fight against the giant. That's, like, a cool scenario that I could see everybody coming through. And Dominate Monster is just one of those spells that completely changes the game for, like, the 1 hour that you have use of it. Now, it is concentration. So unless you're modifying the spell to where you don't need to maintain concentration down on it anymore, it is going to take up that slot for you for a while. But Dominate Monster is an amazing spell.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will disagree. And I guess the only point of criticism that I could see leveraged at Dominate Monster is a very similar spell. Dominate Person is a 5th level spell. And that only applies to humanoids. So the only thing that you're really gaining from Dominate Monster is the ability to affect any creature. But obviously, if you can get this off on some super high CR, you know, Ancient Dragon, Pit Fiend, Baelor, whatever, then obviously it's worth it in the end. But it is that 8th level slot. So same issue as Feeble Mind. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then you're out that slot.
Yeah, I feel like that's the case with a lot of these spells, is if you do happen to lose it, not get it off, then it's like, well, just wasted my 8th level slot. Don't have that anymore.
That's the problem with 8th level spells, though. They have to have enough oomph so that you want to cast them. You want to take that risk so that it gives you that big old bonus you want at the end, right? As far as Dominate Monster goes, I think it's actually one of my personal favorite spells ever, just because you can use it to actually control the other person. It's not like they're assisting you. It's not a conjured angel that's kind of there to help. You could use your reaction sort of thing. Dominate Monster, you could actively use your action to control the other person. It's really not a companion. It's who do you want to be this turn? Do you want to be yourself, or do you want to be the monster you just dominated? Like, that's, I love that flavor, that option, that resource there to just swap bodies really quick or have your hands on an entirely new ability set as you use this person. I think that's sick.
Well, yeah, I guess the other side of that is what evil shenanigans can you get up to with that? You know, I imagine an evil enchanter wizard would definitely use Dominate Person, Dominate Monster to, you know, just do some abhorrent, you know, breaking up true love is my fairy tale thought of how this would be used. I mean, obviously you go to one of the PCs and say, all right, I have dominated your character, and now I'm going to make you, use a sending spell, and go tell your lover in the other town that it's over, blah, 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 blah.
That's terrible.
And then I'm going to kill you.
Oh my God. Okay. So this is like a torturous spell at this point. This is cruel.
Yeah. I mean, so it's truly abhorrent, the kind of shit that you can get up to with dominate spells. So awesome for the party to make the Baelor get a taste of its own medicine, but also devastating for any player to deal with this kind of shit.
See, after you said that, I myself am a Harry Potter fan, like many other people are, and it makes me think of the spell Crucio, which is one of the 3, 4,
unforgivable
five,
curses.
I don't know how many there are, but there's a couple of them. One of the unforgivable curses. Crucio is like the red one, and it makes you just in unsolvable pain. Like, you're just agonizing pain. You're on the ground. You're like seizing up almost. It's terrible to I think you see it a couple times in like the movies and whatnot, if you've seen them. That's kind of what it makes me think of, just with the amount of power you have to control that other person and what they can actually do.
Yeah, you know, that is entirely fair, but I feel like power word pain is definitely like the one-to-one version of that.
No, you're right. You're right.
But at the same time, though, there's no explicit wording in power word pain that you gain any control over them. I mean, obviously you can convince them to do what you want to make it stop. But
Power of Pain is definitely underrated, by the way. No one ever uses that, which I know it's a high-level spell, but yeah, I'd like to see more people use it.
Yeah, I mean, really just put the modifier power word in front of the spell's name, and I'll want to use it.
Do we need more power words? Is that what we need, Zach? Are we saying we need more power word spells in D&D?
Power word clean, second level spell.
I like that there's scalable power words, or maybe all 8th level spells are just power words, you know, things that just go off at that point. I kind of like that
too. Well, I think the idea is that, like, for their verbal component, they use these words, right? Is that not what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to, like, a true name. It's you speak this word of power, which is, you know, spoken in some arcane tongue. Only the most powerful wizards are able to discover the word and then also speak it correctly to get the effect to go off. But there are certain words that just activate truths about magic. And so, you know, at a certain level of power, you say Avada Kedavra, you're dead.
You said it, Zach. That's unforgivable.
Yeah, I mean, Avada Kedavra so is literally just power word kill.
I think we need more power word, definitely, for sure. When I think of power words, I definitely think of kind of what you guys are talking about, the one way that you could say a particular word, like maybe it's a study. It makes me think of shouting from Skyrim.
Exactly.
Or like a brown note, you know? Like, you just say something at a certain tone, and it makes someone shit themselves.
I would love, like, a power word harm or something like that, that, like, just does some psychic damage or some necrotic damage. Power word, I'm trying to think of some other stuff. I mean, power word heal, that would be a cool word for a spell. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, there isn't a power word heal, is there?
Power word push could be power nice, word push. Where it just automatically, like, it pushes them 50 feet away from you.
Power word force. Yeah. I like that. That would be cool. Ooh. Yeah, we need more power words for sure. I agree. This is something we need in the game.
Power word crush. It just crushes something down into, like, little bitty pieces.
Ooh.
Power word disintegrate. It's the disintegrate spell, but you put power word in front of it.
Power word fireball.
just a better spell. I like power word. I don't even know what the word would be. Maybe power word max or something like that. And it's basically just Dynamaxing from Pokemon, where it's enlarge reduce on steroids. You just become, like, gargantuan.
I'm sorry. Power word big.
Power word big. I cast power word big. I think that would be a fun spell. I don't know if it's 8th level worth of being gigantic.
That just reminds me of the alien from Ben 10, way big. Do you guys remember that? Ben 10 Alien Force? Come on, those seasons were amazing.
I was not a Ben 10 kid, but I imagine the alien's power is to get way big.
So yeah, so literally the alien's called Way Big, and it's this gigantic alien that's just white and red, and he's really big. And that's all he is.
Is there like a planet of way bigs?
Yeah.
Are they like all gigantic?
I'm gonna assume so, because all the aliens are real races in Ben 10, so yeah, probably.
Oh, dang. Okay.
So when Ben 10, now we're getting into it. When Ben 10 turns into an alien, he's like summoning. Is he summoning, like, an actual alien to go and fight for him, or is he, like, transforming his body into an alien?
So no. He is transforming into, like, the trapped version of that alien race. So, like, a member of that alien race was basically stored genetically into his Omnitrix. That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, into the Omnitrix. And he is turning into that member of that race. So whoever's DNA was stored in there is what he's turning into.
So what you're saying is that someone has cast a 9th level imprisonment spell on these aliens and stored them in the Omnitrix. And then Ben 10 is casting Dominate Monster to take over their bodies while they body switch, and then Ben comes back out when he's done using the bodies of the aliens.
Yeah, once he loses concentration.
Dang, this man's thinking right now.
Yeah, he's a pretty powerful wizard.
Yeah,
is Ben 10 a wizard,
though? No. Just like any good wizard, when he's in his human form, he has like 6 hit points.
He is a wizard.
Yeah.
He's got to be an artificer. He's got to be an artificer, right? Unless he just has a really cool magical item.
He's just a polymorph wizard, and that's the only thing he can do. It's like he was born in a wild magic zone, and he can just do polymorph, like, but he can only concentrate for, like, 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah, you know, it, really what he's doing is just using a powerful magic item that if I were to actually flavor this on a D&D character, I'd probably have it cast Shape Change, which is a 9th level spell, and we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
I like how Ben 10 comes up in this conversation about 8th level spells.
I mean, Ben 10 is just a shapeshifter. Like, that's what he is.
I guess he's a really shitty wizard.
Drew, do you have a 8th level spell that you'd like to discuss here on this episode?
I mean, that's all.
Yeah, that's literally all the spells. No, My personal favorite spell, I would have to say, of 8th level that I do see, I don't see as frequently cast as I'd like, but it's definitely like one of those up there, is actually Summon Good Old Gamer, actually. And so it summons a medium humanoid creature into your game. It is instantaneous, does not require any concentration. And when he comes in, that creature can actually use his action after your turn to get extra content, like bonus shows, exclusive content, early access to episodes. It's crazy. And the only thing that compares to this in the world that I can think of is actually going to patreon.com/tabletalkfriday, where you get the same benefits of this 8th level spell.
You guys are going to think that I'm just making this shit up. but for those of you listening at home who have been following along, Drew did get me again. And
he got me
I
that
didn't
time.
Know,
he got me that time.
I didn't know you were going there with that. So congratulations, you win again. Woohoo!
But I will bring up a real one. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Good Old Gamer, for supporting us.
You yes, thank
check
you
out our
so
Patreon.
Much.
So I'm going to throw one out here that I actually really like, and I'm afraid to bring it up because there's so much text on it that I don't want to go through all of it. I don't want to piece it all together. But similar to the other spells that I said were very cool in magic items, I'm going to go with Anti-Magic Field.
Yes. This yes, I thing. Love this one.
Yes. I love this. I don't know if it's a great spell, to be perfectly honest, but when I think of 8th level spells or effects that are kind of on the same level, I always think of something in a high-level game where there's literally an anti-magic zone. There's like a mile radius where you can't cast any spells, or all of a sudden wizards have lost their powers in this area. Maybe there's a melee fighter, like a champion trying to take over a city, and you know the mages are in his way, so he stops them by using some sort of ancient relic with this power. That's kind of what it makes me think of, you know? But generally, basically, because it's very long, very long spell here, generally, it makes a 10-foot radius sphere around you. It's got a range of self, which is interesting. And any magic within that zone does not work. Spells cannot be cast inside of it. Spells that are cast outside of it cannot go into this thing. If you're a magical being, if you've been summoned by magic, you no longer exist when you enter this
range. Oh,
that's
nice.
Magical items that you may have. I know, right? It's just get the hell out of here. Magic items you have that might be, you know, crucial to your campaign. Maybe you've been using this magic item for months now. It's like your favorite wand. It's your favorite magic sword. It no longer works in this range. Nothing magic works within 10 feet of you. That's crazy. That's 8th level stuff. But what's weird is it's so small. It's only a 10-foot radius sphere. I imagine it'd be like 30 feet. Or like, I don't know, 60 feet?
You see, I feel like the obvious purpose of this spell is for the wizard to give this, put it in a ring of spell storing and give it to their big berserker, you know, whatever creature it is, but their big enforcer, and, you know, just send him to go wreak havoc on the party. And the second he gets up on you, that magic armor, your cloak of protection, all that shit's going away. And he's just going to go to town on you while the wizard can do nothing to stop it.
That's disgusting, and I love that use of the spell, but it's a self spell. So when you're high enough level to cast this, which is, I think we said 15th or 16th level at this point, you're casting on yourself, and unless I've read it wrong, there's nothing in this spell that specifies you're not affected.
No, you are completely affected. So if you cast this on yourself and, you know, you're not doing that workaround where you've given a ring of spell storing or something. Mm. Yeah, it shuts you down as well. But you can obviously see helpful uses for this. You know, there's this, the seal of Mordenkainen or whatever, you know, cast on this door and you don't have any spells that are possible or that can possibly open this lock. You know, anti-magic field, all of a sudden, that no longer matters. Or you've got a creature who's been dominated, and you're unable to get through to them. Well, obviously, while you don't want to shut down your magical ability, you cast Anti-Magic Field, and you can run up to them and save them, or at least get them to turn on the guy who's dominated them, and then you know, get them back in the in the fight that way. I will mention, though, this spell does not dispel magical effects within. It only suppresses them. So if you do use this to save that dominated creature, they have to stay within 10 feet of you, or otherwise the spell affecting them will take effect again. So that's the shitty part about anti-magic field, but there's just an incredible wealth of interesting situations that you can imagine coming up with this. I mean, it's this suppression field where, you know, the wizard casts Cloud Kill and you cast anti-magic field around your allies so that there's this nice little spot where there's no poison gas, or you know, meteor swarm. The meteor comes down into the anti-magic field and is no more.
Drew, I would like to bring up a situation to you.
Send it my way.
So you know in Mass Effect 2,
okay.
whenever you have to have a biotic character, we had Jack at the end of the game. I'm not spoiling anything here, really. But you're in an area where you're being constantly attacked by creatures, and you have to have a biotic character, like, put up a force field to protect you and your squad so you can walk to, like, the boss battle. That's kind of what I'm imagining here, like an anti-magic field as you're walking through this magical effect that you have to, like, save yourself from.
That's actually, like, I don't think of that when I think of this spell, but I see exactly how you're drawing that connection. I think it's kind of the vibe you get, is you're putting up this dome, you're like the, what's that, what is it? What's the girl from The Incredibles where she has like force fields? It's kind of what it is.
Violet.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little force field you put up that just blocks all of that incoming damage as far as magical, which is weird because you needed a biotic character to do it, and biotic characters are, you know, like less magical, I would imagine, because they're biotic.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I was imagining when Zach was explaining there, and I was like, man, that would be a really cool scenario. Like, everybody has to stay in this 10-foot radius. If you go out, you start to get, like, damaged over time or something like that. Yeah, that's awesome. And on top of that, I think the anti-magic effect in wide ranges, like, you know, like, this room is just an anti-magic room. I think that's where I find it more useful, just because I've used it in dungeons in the past where, like, yeah, you just don't have magic here.
Yeah, I definitely see that more value in that. But now that you say that, Seth, it does make me wonder, like, if you go to the elemental plane of fire and cast anti-magic field. I mean, all the fire there is, it's like real fire, but it's also like a magical plane. So are you unaffected by the fire in that radius?
Well, no, any creature summoned there is dispelled, so you go back to your plane.
Oh, you know, I guess that that could possibly happen. But you could use this to siege the mage school, or, you know, the evil wizard's lair.
I just
and,
think
you
that
know, all of their you know, their apprentices are shooting firebolts and fireballs at you, and you're just walking through unfazed right up to the archmage.
On another plane, like the plane of fire, you are the magic because you're normal as fuck. Like, you cast anti-magic field on the plane of fire, you're the anomaly. Get the fuck out of here.
Like in Monster Hunter, you're just the mundane. You just don't do anything. You're completely normal against all these magical creatures.
Monster of the week.
Oh, that's what I said?
Yeah, Monster of the Week. You said Monster Hunter.
Oh, that's what I meant. I was thinking about, when I said it, I was thinking about the that new tabletop coming out. The horror one by Critical Role. I don't remember what they call it. It was like Obscura Candela.
Candela Obscura, yeah. It's literally like Blades in the Dark, but with their own flavor. But they use the Illuminated World system to build it, which was already established, I believe. So it's just very similar to that system, just using the D6. It's very cool. I appreciate a game that's simple like that and more focused on roleplay. But it's like they said, they were like, yeah, this is more focused for, like, you know, either one shots or like 3-4 session campaigns that are like horror vibes.
I did watch the explanation though, and it does seem cool. And we'll definitely, you know, always appreciate new tabletop games to get more people interested. If, you know, a D20 system seems intimidating, I think Candela Obscura, though, you know, maybe less mainstream than D&D, definitely does seem to be more appealing both to, you know, veteran tabletop players who have experience, but also newcomers. It seems like a system that would be easy to teach to my girlfriend or, you know, anyone else.
Yeah, I would love to learn a system that's very, like, I don't know. I like those Victorian like mystery vibes, and it's definitely not more focused around combat. It's like, oh yeah, what can I do with this? So I definitely like to try some different theme stuff like that. And I want to teach some games to the people on base here. So that way I can play tabletop games again, since we're in a drought of tabletop games.
We need more tabletop games.
No, I'm saying we're in a drought as in like we never get to play.
Oh yeah. So we're not playing this weekend. We did play last week. We've been missing like every other week, I feel like, at this point.
And yeah.
If we play.
I don't think we played last week, did we?
No, it's been two weeks. We played 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we played. Oh my gosh. We gotta, you know what? Let's play. We need to play on this podcast. Maybe we should finish up that one-off we were doing.
I do not have the next session of that prepared right now.
Oh no.
Mostly because I don't have my book, which is what I was running it out of.
Yeah, maybe we'll get back to... we've started Dragon Heist so many times that I would like to finish that someday. and I don't know when we'll have the time for this, but Wild Beyond the Witchlight just has me all excited. We already made characters. We had our whole thing going.
Yeah, Wild Beyond the Witchlight is a very cool campaign. And I don't know, ever since before I left for Basic, I've been wanting to just play something sci-fi. And like I still want to do it. Like, I still want to play something sci-fi or Spelljammer. Like, I just, but we can't play Spelljammer until we finish our current campaign.
We have to finish the campaign. Well, I don't even want to finish the campaign because I feel so behind now. Like, I feel disconnected. So I need us to have an extended version of the campaign. We have to have a whole other arc now just to get back into it.
Well, we are in the Minoru's arc right now. We have a lot to do there.
Give us more stuff to do, Seth. Now, we need more side quests just to feel it.
I know we're supposed to be talking about 8th level spells, but I feel like we've covered a lot of the mainstream ones. What I would like to say is, bringing Zelda into the conversation. The Underdark area in Zelda feels very much like how I imagine Minoru's to be in our current freaking campaign. I was playing through it and I was like, oh man, this is just like being in like my version of Minoru's that I had imagined. Like the layer of hell.
Yeah, with all of your stone trees and your trees, gross marshes,
like
bugs.
Yeah, I was super excited about that because I got down there and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like my version of like the fourth layer of hell. This is great. So I might be using some of that stuff that happened in Zelda down there to inspire me.
Go for it. That's really the DM secret that I keep near and dear to my heart is the best material that you could possibly find for DMing is shit that you steal from someone else.
I mean, some of my best sessions have come from just whatever video game I'm playing at the time. Like, oh yeah, I'm feeling more, what is it, like Norse mythological because I played through God of War. Let's do a God of War themed like arc or something like that.
That would be cool. I would like to play a game-based D&D. That would be fun. We already talked about like Doom or Zelda. I think that would be pretty neat. Just kind of putting ourselves maybe in that world. That would be kind of neat.
Oh, man. If I got to run, like, even a short arc in Hyrule, I would be ecstatic.
I'd be down for that.
I kind of want to do that.
We could do a Zelda one-off and see where it goes.
Oh, my God. It would be, like, the Link 4 swords. Four of you guys make different versions of Link.
I would honestly get behind that. But more than that, I think it would be fun to, like, reflavor, like, the races in Zelda, you know? Like,
when
I think of a Goron, like...
The Rito, the Gorons. Yeah.
Zora. I mean, Azora is obviously just like a Triton, but
yeah,
like Goron,
Zora's a Triton. The Rito are Arakocra.
Oh, Gorons are they're Genasi. They're Earth Genasi.
Yeah, they could be Earth Genasi. They could be what is it? Like they could be Stone Goliaths.
Yeah, they could definitely be Goliath.
Oh, that new Goliath! I want to play him more. He was fun. I want to do some of the different variants of him.
And we would need someone to play a Gerudo too. Okay, yeah, if you guys were playing, like, champions that were that were protecting the realm while Link and Zelda were missing or something like that, how cool would that be?
That would be sick. Or you know, honestly, let's remove Link and Zelda, okay? This is the ancient hero who is discussed in the literature or whatever. But this is not Link's story, okay? This is the story of Goro the Goron.
Tell him, Zach.
And his three friends, Zordo the Zora.
No. Think about it like this. You're in like the post-apocalyptic Ocarina of Time, like after the hero died.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I'm thinking. We don't need no stinking Link, all right? I think that's the perfect time to set it.
The crazy thing is, in most Zelda games, nobody knows who Link is, but in Tears of the Kingdom, Link is like a famous adventurer because of everything he went through in Breath of the Wild. So like, you know, you run across NPCs and they're like, Link, oh my God, it's so good to see you. And I'm like, wait, it's weird that you're calling me Link and that you know who I am.
Yeah, I mean, but you're the same Link that already met all these people and saved them last time.
So yeah.
It makes sense because it's a sequel, but you're right. Usually it's like, you know, a new descendant of Link 200 years in the future. No one knows who he is, whatever.
Yeah, okay. So I'm in for this this Zelda one-off, though. I'm Zelda one-off or two or three-off, because it probably need like two or three sessions to tell a good Zelda story.
I'd be into it.
See, I know we just shadow on Link and like render our own thing, but I kind of want to be like Link's fan club, and we go out like to try to solve just like this tiny little thing that he doesn't have time for. Like, oh, maybe Link will notice us if we do this. Let's go do this mission.
No, that's what I'm saying. You guys are the Triforce heroes.
That would also absolutely be fun. Don't get me wrong. I think it would be even more hilarious to be like Link Four Swords, you know, and we're all Link and we're just like slightly different versions of Link. Like, ooh, I'm Moody Link.
Maybe that's this year's Christmas one-off. Maybe I have you guys jump through a different game universe. You get stuck in a console that Santa gave to somebody. And you go through all these different game universes. You have to find your way to find Link to help you get out. And you have to go into like a Doom universe. Then you get to like a first person shooter. And it becomes different. And you get different mechanics.
Christmas one-off cool. 3. Ralph Breaks the Internet.
I never saw Wreck-It Ralph. I never did.
No?
No. I heard it was pretty good. It looked kind of funny, to be honest. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's any good. But
yeah, I never saw Ralph Breaks the Internet. But I thought Wreck-It Ralph was fun at the time. I think it was maybe a little... It relied too heavily on like references to gaming culture without saying too much about it. Like they didn't do enough interesting with the concept. I'll say like it ultimately devolved into just a standard Disney sort of story where they also happen to be video game characters.
So if you guys go to reclaimthewild.net, someone has written up a rule book for a Zelda Breath of the Wild RPG.
Fuck
Zelda
yeah.
5e, let's do it. Let's do it. It might not even be considered 5e anymore. It might be like
I don't know if it's 5e, but I mean really you could just run it in 5e, like no problem.
That's what I like about 5e though, is it's just so compatible thing.
It would be so easy to just make the game in 5e as is without a new system. Be like, yeah, make whatever character you want, you're just in Hyrule and theme it after Zelda characters. Done.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, Zelda's a fantasy world. It's not hard to make D&D work for that.
Maybe it's time I give Zelda a try. I don't know. I'd like to play maybe an older game instead of one of the newer ones. Or maybe I need to play one of the newer ones just to get back into it and understand like the references and whatnot.
No, you should play A Link to the Past, and then you'll know everything you need to
know.
A Link
to the Past was the one that Drew was saying he wanted to play before I moved away.
Yeah. It's the only Zelda game I've ever played in my life. I played it when I was super little, but I was too little to actually play it effectively. Maybe that's what I do. Maybe I'm gonna go buy one of those old Nintendo consoles and buy it. I don't know. What
you,
I need.
You could absolutely make it happen, but it would probably be cheaper at this stage to just get a Switch and pay for Switch Online.
Or,
can I play Link to the Past on the Switch?
Or we can make it happen legally another way.
Yeah, right, right. A very legal other way that we can discuss offline. Nintendo, do not listen to this episode, Nintendo. You're not welcome.
Zach, when you're editing this, just bleep this out.
Yeah, you should play Link to the Past and or just Breath of the Wild / Tears. Yeah, Breath of the Wild is where I would start. That and Link to the Past are like, okay, these are the two that change the game.
But I feel like if I play Breath of the Wild, from what I've heard about it, you know, it sounds like a great game, and I know it changed the industry and all that, but it sounded very like grindy, like collecting all the things you had to get and whatnot. I really just want to experience a Zelda story.
So,
I really want to do the whole
grind. Yeah,
you know how
when I played Elden Ring, I just kind of sat around and explored forever.
Yeah,
that's exactly what Breath of the Wild's like.
I don't know if I want, like, that sounds like a great experience. I'm just not sure if that's what I'm looking for. I think to experience Zelda, what I want is just a straightforward railroad kind of experience of, you know, you have to go into this cave and get the sword, and then you rebuild the Triforce, if that's how
it works.
Do you
have a Wii?
You know, I do not, but I'm sure I could get one for, like, $5 at this point.
Man, if you could play Twilight Princess or Wind Waker... Those two are amazing games too. Like those ones are straight up story too. I think Wind Waker has like the best intro out of any Zelda game, and then Twilight Princess is my like the closest one to my heart just because it's the one that got me into it.
Yeah, I distinctly remember on my third birthday, Zelda Wind Waker had just come out, and so I got that video game for the day I turned 3, and I did not get very far in it because there's a lot of sailing that you have to do, and I wasn't all about waiting around and sailing, but but it definitely captured my imagination, and Zach's brother Eric played the crap out of that, so I'm intimately familiar with everything that happens in Wind Waker, and honestly, Twilight Princess was the same situation when that came out. I was like, you know, this is awesome, but there's just too much running around on your horse across this large world for me to get into it. Really, the thing about Twilight Princess, not to make this the Zelda podcast, which it already is at this point, you turn into a wolf in that game. And I just wasn't I wasn't about the furry lifestyle at 7 years old.
I loved Wolf Link as a kid. Every chance that I got to change into Wolf Link, I was like, hell yes, I'm edgy as fuck.
So why are we Wolf Link? I don't know. Why is Link turning into a wolf?
Here's
is
the premise of Twilight Princess. So basically, in this one, there's like a normal world, like a normal Hyrule, and there's like an upside down. So like a bad world called like the Twilight Realm. When Link goes into the Twilight Realm,
it's really the Shadow.
Yeah, and when Link goes into the Shadowfell or the Twilight Realm, most people, when they go there, they just become like souls or spirits. They're not able to like actually access it. Link, because he has the Triforce of Courage, is able to be protected and doesn't change into like a soul when he's there. Instead, he changes into a wolf. And it's so cool.
Oh, that's so weird. Now, the Twilight thing, I remember when I played Link to the Past briefly. My dad had beat it. My dad, Eric, you know, to make sure he's anonymous there.
good. Wouldn't want anyone to know about your dad, Eric.
No, wouldn't want him to know. My dad, Eric, had played this game and beat it as a kid. And so there was my save file, which I could never get past, like, anything. I had, like, 4 hearts, maybe, or something. And then his save file, where he was all decked out, and he'd beat the game and all that kind of stuff. And there was a mirror item that you could activate, and it would bring you to this dark world. Is that the Twilight world?
Yeah.
No, but it's very similar. Well, you know, I don't know in the lore if they've, like, made that official, but it's a common theme in Zelda that there's, like, there's a light world and a dark world. And so in Twilight Princess, they call it the Twilight Realm, but it's very much like the same vibe, where the dark world is like the light world, except it's overrun with monsters and that sort of thing. And they sort of like bring it up in different ways in different games. Like in Ocarina of Time, there's like 2 different worlds that you can go through, but it's not the light world and the dark world. It's just the present and the future. And the future happens to be the dark world.
Yeah, and then what is it? When you get to Majora's Mask, it doesn't take place in Hyrule, it takes place in Lowrule. You go.
No, but please, it's Termina. Lowrule is
never
from
mind,
a Link
I'm stupid.
Between
Lowrule
Worlds.
Lowrule is from Link Between Worlds. Yeah, Termina was the inside one. It's like a world inside the world. There's a whole theme in Zelda that's like, two sides, the world has like 2 different sides of the same coin or whatever.
But it's all just the material plane in the Shadowfell when you get down to it. Or maybe the Feywild. Termina's probably the Feywild, in my opinion.
I don't want to play that game. I'm not going to. Screw that. That place is terrible. You know, you were talking earlier, Zach. You said something about, I don't know if it was the Underdark or whatever it might have been. Or maybe it was Seth. You were talking about stone trees. I was thinking, there's no good trees in D&D. If it's not a regular tree, it's a stone tree that's like rotting and it's part of a curse. There's iron trees that knights in hell want to put you on top of so that you're suffering. There's moving trees in the Feywild that want to crush you.
We need
like,
to have a
no
nice
good
nature-based art.
You know, we have not. Yeah, honestly, we do. I do remember in one of Lanky Eric's campaigns, he did have a whole city that was like built inside of a tree. It was like a massive tree.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. But you're right. Usually in our campaigns, it's if we run into tree ants, they're mean for some reason.
They're always mean.
Well, except for the tree ants that were at that one tower that you guys visited. You know, the nice ones. It's the one tower where
back in
Everland, yeah. Moongleam Tower.
Yeah.
Oh, right. They do have tree ants helping.
Yeah,
out
see, they're
there.
Nice.
That's true.
There were also those flying cats. Were they flying cats? What are those cats?
Yeah,
like?
The flying cats.
Tressums.
I like Tressums. Are there flying dogs, too? There should be flying dogs. If there's not, because I would be a flying dog type of person.
You could make it happen.
Yeah, I
cats
mean,
fly
sure.
on a dog.
Why not? I like the thought that like flying dogs don't actually have wings though. They just fly.
Wait, they're just floating around for no reason.
They're just flying dogs.
Yeah,
like
Crypto the Superdog.
Yeah, Crypto the Superdog. What was it? Was it Underdog?
Underdog,
yeah, like him.
Oh, yeah, well, was it the cape that made him fly, or was it he that was flying? I thought he had a magical cape.
Okay, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question.
I don't know. He's an old cartoon character.
In the post show, remind me to talk about what happened with my dog Eric yesterday, so people don't know what my dog is. My dog Eric did a terrible thing yesterday that I'll tell you guys about in some exclusive post show content.
Yeah, you know, we're running up on time, so just to wrap up the eighth level spells conversation, I did want to bring up one more spell, which I always look over every time I look through the eighth level spells, but I took a chance to actually read it, and it's fairly interesting. It's Abidalzim's Horrid Wilting.
What?
Yeah, every time I read this spell, just scanning over it, I thought it was Abidalzim's Horrid Writing, and I I just wrote it off as, oh yeah, it's some weird text thing, whatever. But no, it's Horrid Wilting. And essentially, it's like an AoE blight. So you draw the moisture from every creature in a 30-foot cube centered on a point you choose within range. This is like the evil blood-bending, water-bending sort of shenanigans where you just suck all the moisture out of all the living creatures you can. So each creature in a 30-foot cube must make a constitution saving throw. Constructs and undead aren't affected, and plants and water elementals make this saving throw with disadvantage. A creature takes 12 d8 necrotic damage, which is the same as an 8th level blight, on a failed save, and has as much on a successful one. Non-magical plants in that area that aren't creatures, such as trees and shrubs, wither and die instantly. So this is just an area of effect blight. All the water's gone.
Oh.
And you just shrivel everyone up into Ganondorf, and then you throw them underground, and then Link's arm gets weird later.
That's like actually a good spell.
Last one, I'll say, just for honorable mention, just because I feel like it's kind of a frequent effect that you would see in games as far as like an evil lair or something, control weather. I feel like this is a thing that happens. You know, we have a storm sorcerer in our group who's changing the weather frequently. He changes the wind so that we could sail on boats, and he changes the rain and all that kind of stuff. Control weather just lets you change currents and rain and the temperature and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty cool. You could even roll for like how long it takes to activate. There's a concentration thing to it. It's a 5-mile radius. So it's actually very cool. It's super situational. I can't think of like a ton of situations where you're going to need to use it, but I feel like it would fall under the frequently cast sort of effects of 8th level spells at this point. So honorable mention to that one.
Yeah, and you know, I will bring up Holy Aura as well, which is exclusive to clerics, which it's just a 30-foot radius around you, and all of your allies in that radius have advantage on all saving throws, and all attacks against them have disadvantage. Additionally, fiends and undead that hit an affected creature have the aura flash with a brilliant light, and then they must succeed on a con save or be blinded until the end of the spell. Very helpful. I wish we had a cleric who could cast this, because honestly, saving throws are what will doom us in the end, I have no doubt. So it's nice that there's a spell that actually does that. And then there is one more spell that I just want to talk about. I mean, we didn't even mention Power Word Stun when we were talking about Power Words before, but if the target has fewer than 150 hit points when you cast this, it is stunned. And then they must make a constitution saving throw at the end of their turns, ending it on a success. But, you know, it goes off no matter what, so that's awesome. But the one other spell that I did want to mention, in how shitty it is and how no one should ever cast this spell, is Maze. Do you guys know what Maze does?
I've never heard of Maze.
I've seen the words there, and every time I see it, I'm like, probably not good.
Okay, so you know the fourth level spell, Banishment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if we took that spell and made it worse in every way, and then made it cost an 8th level slot? So what this does, it's concentration up to 10 minutes. So to be fair, it could last for 10 minutes. It will not last for 10 minutes. You banish a creature that you could see within range into a labyrinthine demiplane. The target remains there for the duration or until it escapes the maze. The target can use its action to attempt to escape. So again, this goes off instantly. You do banish them for your, on your turn, you banish them. But on their turn, they can use an action to escape. The target uses its action to attempt to escape. When it does so, it makes a DC 20 intelligence check. It does not go off of your spell save DC for whatever reason. The DC is always 20. If it succeeds, it escapes and the spell ends. A Minotaur or Goristro demon automatically succeeds, which, you know, that's a nice flavor. But when the spell ends, the target reappears in the space it left. So again, for an 8th level slot, you do the same thing as banishment. Now, I will grant you this. Up front, there is no save. So it does send them there for one turn. But they can use their action to escape. And so the only creatures that this is really going to be useful against are like really big, dumb creatures. But unlike banishment, if the spell ends without them escaping, then they just come back anyway. And they have infinite chances to escape on a DC 20 intelligence check, which now, you cannot make any higher.
If this was just a... I think if this was just like, hey, they go there, and until they get out of the maze, they're stuck there. That's a great
right,
spell.
I think that would be awesome. Yeah. That's an adventure and a spell.
That's boring, though. If you just send someone away, no save or anything, and they're gone for 10 minutes, it's like you get into a big boss fight, they cast maze, that's it. For the rest of the session, you're not here.
Well, not necessarily, though, because it's like once they get out, they're good.
Yeah, after 10 minutes.
But yeah, but no, because if they escape, they get out. So if they get out in 12 seconds, they're out.
Right. It just takes the time that it takes to escape the maze. But the thing that I don't like about it is it just takes an intelligence check. Like, there's nothing that states, like, the maze is populated with monsters or, like, there are any complications that they might run into in there. It's quite simply, yeah, it's a maze. And in 6 seconds, they'll be out.
Now what I do yeah. like is take this spell, right? Make a 9th level version of it that is just like, you know, greater maze. And you send someone...
Call it Labyrinth.
Yeah, Labyrinth. Ooh. You send someone into the Labyrinth, and they quite literally go there and have to, like, get through complications and fight things until they get out. Like, it's like you're fighting against the boss, and instead you get sent into a second dungeon during the middle of the boss fight and have to come back and continue the fight. See, that's cool for like a villain to use.
Call it like arena or coliseum, and you're literally just locked in combat while you're in this demiplane with something. You maybe have to roll for what it would be, or it'd have to be a specific creature.
Someone or something has to die for you to get out.
So I could imagine this being like a really cool spell, but they just have to change every aspect of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like if the spell automatically goes off, but then like maybe you have to make a perception check to like get. Like as you're being transported into the maze, you can get your bearings really quick, like as you're falling down into the spot and you can see the exit, and then you just have to be able to like get to the end. Maybe that gives you advantage on your check, but it's got to be like it has to last for more than one round no matter what. I feel like it should be, if you don't want to make it into a whole adventure and have them actually go through a maze, make that happen in play, then make it 3 successful intelligence checks to get out. But if you fail 3 times, then it lasts the full duration. Something like that. I think that would be awesome, and it would make this spell actually useful. Currently, I can't imagine anyone casting
Yeah, in this space, it's like, all right, maybe the DM uses it in a creative way. That's about it.
Right, and if you're the DM using it, make a bunch of shit up. Make the party actually go through the maze. Yeah. Don't just have it end with a DC 20 intelligence
yeah,
check.
Yeah, exactly.
Another example of an 8th level spell that would be very cool as a magic item. Just saying. Magic item that takes you into a labyrinth.
Yeah, 8th level, just saying, 8th level cool. effects are all just really good for RP, for villains to use, and for the DM. And then players just use your 7th level spells at 8th level.
Oh, God. Just upcast things at that point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The last thing I'm going to say on maze is, at the very least, just change the name of maze, because the only reason you're calling it maze is because apparently it's putting you in this labyrinth that they don't specify, and then it gives like Minotaurs the ability to get out instantly. So it's just, the name is based off the idea of its biggest weakness is that some people could just get out of it. So
right,
call it
exactly.
Something else.
It's really like lesser banishment if you think about it.
Yeah, it's no bueno. It's no bueno.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to Table Talk Friday. This has been Zachary Carvin, Andrew Romano, and Seth Pittman talking about your frequently cast 8th level spells. We said we might get to 9th level, and guess what we did? Not that. So, if you'd like even more of what we're up to, if you'd like to hear us talk more about Zelda, what's going on in our personal lives, and everything else gaming nerd, D&D tabletop related, you can find us on patreon.com/tabletalkfriday, where you can get a bevy of just bonus content. Like you get the sweet post shows, you get to hear some of the episodes early, and plenty more. You can interact with us there as well. So go over to patreon.com/tabletalkfriday to see what we're up to. You can also find us on some social media channels that we're totally posting on every single all the time. Especially over at twitter.com, where there's just a dumpster fire of people just interacting with one another and enjoying their lives to the fullest. On top of that, thank you for listening to Table Talk Friday. I don't have anything else to say.
So we have to have Zach take us out.
Oh yeah. So with that, I need to have the maze man take me out.
The maze man.
Woo! Thank you so much for listening to Table Talk Friday. My name is Clem, and I am the Maze Man. I do love a good maze, but what I love more than maze is my maze. I just love growing corn, and I love growing it in the shape of a labyrinth, that you can't escape. My maze, that's what I call it. Again, my name is Clem, and I love Table Talk Friday, and I hope all of you get trapped in my maze. I mean, have a good night.